Like we've said in our announcements, we've got a lot of people missing. Some are sick, some are traveling, but the important point for tonight, you are here. So I'm glad you're here this evening as we come to worship God in spirit and in truth. Turn with me, if you will, to 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. Well, we were talking about preaching tonight and talking about simple lessons. So you're going to have a simple lesson tonight. In fact, I look at my repertoire, and that's all I give, are simple lessons. The focus of my lesson tonight is upon seven important four-letter words. Now, I almost didn't give you the title because what's going to happen is you're going to try to be guessing which words I'm going to use. May I suggest don't do that and just go along with me as I look at these seven four-letter words that are important to live by. And you'll see where I'm coming from. And this is real helpful, something like this, is when you're getting frustrated in line. Think about different words and biblical application of those words. So we're going to immediately go on and talk about the first word, time. I think you'd agree with me, most of us in this audience are older in years. Time's an important word. Time's a word that we need to live by. Did you realize tonight we're almost halfway through 2025? Doesn't it seem like 25 just started? And the year is already half over. And for those of us that are older, without going into a lot of reminiscing, and it's interesting because when I was young, I used to hear older people reminisce that, oh, no, I hope I never get that age. Well, I'm there. Because time goes by ever so quickly. Now, this is an important word because God talks about time on numerous occasions. We're just going to use a few examples on how important that is. And we should be in the book of 1 Peter chapter 1 and look at verse 24 with me. Chapter 1, verse 24. All flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man as the flower of grass. The grass withers, and the flower falls away. Think about it. All flesh is as grass. That's how quickly it goes by. Now, let's add a few more passages to that before we move on and talk about some other things. As we look at some others, let's go to Psalm 34. I really like Psalms 34. Not 34, 39, I'm sorry. Psalms 39. Verses 4 and 5. Psalms 39, verses 4 and 5. Lord, make me know my end, and what is the measure of my days. And I like this New King James, that I may know how frail I am. And then in verse 5 it goes on to state, indeed you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but a vapor. Think about that. You know, no matter what age you are, you can remember years gone by. Can remember the teenage years. Some of us can remember the grade school. I mean, we can remember all these different times in our life. Isn't it like a vapor? That's gone. For most of us, that's gone. You can never bring back time. You ever stop to think? Just let me give this little test to you. What was important to you in the 20s, is that equally important today at your age? You see, time changes things, does it not? And time goes by ever so quickly. You know, when we used to shop, you don't have many shopping malls anymore, but years ago when you used to shop, I would walk around the food court. Maybe that's my problem, as my wife would be shopping in the stores. And someone would ask me, what are you doing? Wasting time. That's what I would say. We waste a lot of time, don't we? And the sad thing about that, it can't be brought back. We're but a vapor. One more passage on that as we deal with time. James 4:14. You know, people say, I had one lady years ago, she had obeyed the gospel, she fell away, she came back to do that which is right years later. In the meantime, she had some daughters. And those daughters growing up did not experience the years growing up on serving the Lord. They were already in their teenage years when she came back. And I'll never forget her name. Her name was Bonnie. Sweet woman, dedicated woman. literally tears flowing down her eyes, because she had wished that she had returned much earlier. And of course, I can see her point, but she didn't. She has to do the best with what she had right then and there. But that's time. We take time for granted, and really, we don't know now, do we? So with time, remember James chapter 4 and verse 14, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Again, Anne Burrell, she's used to be a cooking host on the cooking channel. She passed away. I don't know the specifics. I don't know the lady personally. But she passed it away at a young age, 55. That's young by today's standards. You don't know. I'm glad you're here tonight. And I hope and pray if we're given another week, you'll be here next week if you're not out of town. But you don't know. So when I think of an important word that I must keep on my mind, use your time wisely. But let's go to the next one. Now, we can have a whole series of lessons on this one. Four-letter word, love. Which direction am I going to go? Well, I'm going to go three directions real quickly. I'm going to break down this love, and I'm talking about agape love, a love that is self-sacrificing. I could give a lesson on love, 1 Corinthians 13, the definition of love. But what I chose to do when I look at this four-letter word, love from three angles. First of all, our love towards God, the Father. Let's go to 1 John chapter 5. In 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3, there we have recorded for us very simply this statement. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. Pretty simple. Now, I know there's many more passages we can tie in there, but this is kind of an overview, something to think about. Do I need to have this type of love? Yes. How is it shown? It's shown by keeping his commandments. It's not shown by lip service. It's shown by obedience. Also, so that's the first love, the love for God the Father. Well, of course, we've got the love for Jesus Christ. Let's go to John chapter 14. In John chapter 14 and verse 23. Again, as we look at these four-letter words, very simple, but it's something we need to make application to in our daily lives. 14 verse 23 says this, And Jesus answered and said to him, If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Again, kind of similar to the first one, right? The Father, you keep the commandments here. If you love me, you're going to keep my words, and my Father and I are going to come unto you. So both situations shows that this love is not just simply some type of mental assent. It's an action. That being said, go to John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. In John chapter 13, 34 and 35, the love for one another. So we got the love of the Father, the love of the Son, and the love for one another. And John 13, 34, A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you, and you also love one another. By this will all know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. And again, all of these are lessons in and of themselves. We could spend a lot of time on each one of those things. But it's just showing our love from three different directions. The love of the Father requires obedience to the Son. The love of the Son requires obedience to the Word. The love of one another involves serving one another, to doing those things. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. So we've talked about two things that in our life. First of all, we talked about time, and we've talked about very briefly biblical agape love. Now, as we continue talking about the seven lessons to learn from these four-letter words, we're going to go to the third one, pray. Pray. Prayer is very important. Let's go to some passages on pray. In 1 Thessalonians, you don't even have to go there. Pray without ceasing. That's what it says. Pray without ceasing. And again, we've studied this before, just kind of a quick review. That doesn't mean that you're in prayer mode or praying all the time, because you're going to have to work, you're going to have to eat, you're going to have to communicate with others. But my understanding of this, and it's not talking about a prayerful attitude. Some brethren say, well, that just has a prayer. No, that's not saying. It doesn't say have a prayerful attitude. It says pray. Pray without ceasing. And my understanding of that is I pray to God throughout the day. I pray in the morning. I'm not going to tell you when you should pray in the morning. I pray at different times in the afternoon. I pray at different times in the evening. Now, you might have set times where you pray, and there's nothing wrong with that. But don't limit it to that. You can pray at other times, can you not? You're going into a different difficult circumstance? Pray without ceasing. Go to God in prayer. You're dealing maybe with a problem with a loved one or a problem with a friend or whoever. Pray without ceasing. I know when I've gone into various religious discussions with other denominations, I pray without ceasing. I pray as I'm going to the discussion. I might even give a short prayer while I'm there. I pray without ceasing. When we get rain so hard that my silly windshield wipers don't get rid of it fast enough. And I feel again, I actually do say a prayer then. I don't close my eyes because I barely can see as it is. But I pray that I can get through that circumstance. So pray without ceasing. Again, as we talk about prayer, let's go to Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4, another four-letter word, very important in our daily lives. There we have now, in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 12, something very simple when we talk about prayer. Once I get to Colossians, I know I do have one. Here it is, Colossians 4 and verse 12. It states this. Now again, I've said this before. I have for 40-some-odd years, say Epaphras. And I'm still comfortable with saying Epaphras. But I have been informed by some brethren, not here, by the way, somewhere else. I have been informed by some brethren, and I have been informed by some Bible programs that if you go and they pronounce the word, they don't say Epaphras. They say Epaphras. So whether you say Epaphras or Epaphras, I'm not going to argue with you. We're talking about the same guy. But as we look at this in chapter 4 and verse 12, and I'm going to go back to my original way. Epaphras, who is one of you, a bondservant of Christ, greets you always, laboring fervently for you in what? Prayers. And you know what we have about this illustration? He even says what he's praying for. Laboring for you in prayers that you might stand perfect and complete in the will of God. He's praying for his brethren that they grow spiritually. Do we do that? Do we pray for one another individually that we grow spiritually? That's what he's praying, that his brethren might be complete. Again, when we look at prayer, of course, we've got Philippians chapter 4 and Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6. Here we have recorded, and again, many, many passages on prayer, but these are the ones I have chosen. In verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. You know, we had a major event happen yesterday. No problem, we should be praying about that. Praying that good can come from that. Praying that this nation can continue to stand. I am glad that God was mentioned, but God needs to be on the forefront of this. And we need to pray. You know, sometimes because something hasn't happened in our area, we are disconnected with it. Understand when I say, we are not disconnected with that event. So we ought to be praying and praying hard that we make the right choices and go the right course and glorify God. And I'm not talking politically. Honestly, I don't care what you are politically. My big concern is that we have the freedoms that we still have this day, and that we can see our children and grandchildren have such freedoms. So if you didn't do it, put that in your prayer tonight, that this nation can continue so that we can have these freedoms that we've enjoyed. And I'm not a doomsayer, but again, this is important. I know we get caught up and we're involved in basketball, if you like pro basketball, and we're involved in baseball, and you know, all that's good. But this other topic might be our well-being. So we need to pray on so many areas. So a very good four-letter word, and that is pray. None of my business how much you pray, but you should be praying. And so should I. Next word is an interesting word because I could take this in so many different directions. Care. Simple word, care. Care about what? Well, that's where I could take in many directions. And I'm going to show you that this care I'm talking about is caring for our brethren. We need to have care. Very important that we have the biblical care one towards another. In fact, let's go to some passages along that as we talk about care. And 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Now again, like I said, don't try to guess what the next one's going to be. Listen to what I'm saying. Probably not going to include some that you would have included in your list. And 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 25, it states this. New King James Version. That there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. Okay, notice what book it's written in. Corinthians. You know why that's interesting? How does 1 Corinthians start out? Problems. What do they have in chapter 6? Problems. What do they have basically throughout most of the book? Problems. What's he telling them here? The Corinthians, the brethren at Corinth, that they should have the same care. There should be no division. What was Corinthians facing? Various divisions, were they not? They should have the same care one for another. It's a good lesson to learn. Churches today have problems, but don't let them lead to division. Work out the problem. Do that which is right, but then have the same care one for another. Talking about our care for our brethren. Here's an important one. Let's go to Philippians chapter 2. In Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. And by the way, we also talked this evening, and I agree, you should have a 3-4 point lesson. Well, tonight you got a 7 point lesson. But you see how quickly I'm going over this. We have Philippians chapter 2, 3 and 4. Look at what it says here. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only on your own interest, but also the interest of others. That is so simple to say. But brethren, if we're honest with ourselves, it's going to take every ounce of fiber for you to do that. It's going to take every ounce of fiber for me to do that. Because sometimes even unknowingly, we put our own wants above that for the needs of others. Is that a possibility? The same care one for another. As we look at verse 3 and 4, notice in verse 3, the end, to esteem others better than himself. That's not the American way. The American way is what? Put yourself on a pedestal. But now we're to esteem others better than ourselves. Same care for one another. Now think about this. Think about the first century. What do you think those congregations were composed of? Pagans who came out of paganism, Jews who came out of Judaism, various people who had come from various false gods. They had a whole gambit of people, did they not? Would it have been very easy to almost elevate yourself a little bit better than that pagan because you were a Jew? No, don't esteem yourself better than others. Esteem them better. Now, I'm not talking about the pagan who stayed in paganism. I'm talking the person who came out of paganism and became a child of God. I love this passage, 3 and 4, that these two verses eliminate, if we live by them, these two verses eliminate prejudice. Right? We have a society that's very prejudiced, and the media stokes the fire of that. If we have the same care one for another, and we esteem others better than ourselves, it doesn't matter what ethnic background you have. It doesn't matter how many riches you have. You know, sometimes, you know, you think, well, the rich look down on the poor, and sometimes that's the case. But the bigger problem is some of those of us who are not as rich look down upon the rich. No. We need to have the same care one for another. We need to esteem them above ourselves. And then look at verse 4 as we look at that. Look out for their interests. It's not always what you want. It's not always what I want. Now, we're not talking about doctrinal issues. Understand this. Doctrinal issues, we have no wiggle room. None whatsoever. Zero. We're talking about issues that is not doctrine. For instance, if I was in an area and a various amount of Catholics, older people, 50s, 60s, 70s, obeyed the gospel, I probably would not serve them any beef if they came to my house on a Friday. Because the older ones have been brought up thinking, what? You don't eat beef on Friday, you eat fish. I remember that going to a public school. Going to a public school, when I was on the public school and I had my lunch car because I'd get hot lunch. My wife teases me that she thought I was rich because I got hot lunch all the time. I had hot lunch and had that little car. Fridays, you didn't get anything with beef. This was a public school. This is up in Chicago now. You either got a toasted cheese sandwich, as I call them, or you got fish sticks. I didn't like either one. Now, they did that because they were following a religious protocol at that time. Do I have to follow that protocol? No. If I have someone over who's been a member of the Lord's body, maybe a new member of the Lord's body, and they've come out of Catholicism, they might still have the problem. Although I think they've done away with that, I think. But you had the older ones who are firm believers in that. So I'm going to esteem them. I'm not going to eat meat. If I want to eat meat, I won't have them over on a Friday. I'll have them over on Saturday or Sunday. Now, I have to remind myself of those who might be vegans. To me, that's worse than not eating meat. To me, that's not like even eating. That's my opinion. So I always ask Susan when we have someone over, what are we going to get to eat? Because I want to know which direction. Tease my children. There have been recent commercials on Spam. I like Spam. Not good for you, but I like it. Spam is well known in Hawaii. I told Jake, I said, some Sunday we're going to just have Spam casserole. And he looked at me as I was talking some foreign language. Okay, those are simple things. But going back to this illustration, look out for the interest of others. It's not just myself. One last point on that. If your brother or sister gets elevated or gets... And by the way, we should give compliments. If they get a compliment that you don't, be happy they got the compliment. Maybe they needed it more than you. You can go on and do that which is right. But let's go on. Got one more on this list. That's Philippians chapter 1 and verse 27. Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. That's very important. Very important as we show care one for another. That I put it this way, that we're all on the same page. What are we here for? Well, we are here so that we can fulfill our obligation to worship. But also we're here to let our light so shine that what? That God might be glorified. That others can see that there is a pattern that follows the New Testament church, correct? And that should be our goal. Why do congregations dwindle down to nothing? I don't have a singular answer in that. There's a whole host of things that causes that. But one of those things, we have to get our mind out of our mind that this building is not simply to facilitate us coming on Sundays and perhaps midweek. This building is here because the congregation has afforded to buy this building so that we can come together, but it's not just coming together and check off the list. It's coming together to build one another up so that we can go and reach others, so that hopefully some of them will come together and they can be built up. Think about that. So why are you here tonight? Well, you're here because we have scheduled to be here, but hopefully you're here because you're concerned about others and you're on the same page. But let's go on. We're almost getting to the end. Here's a nice one, work. Work. Had a good friend in Illinois, came out of denominationalism, actually came out of Catholicism, became more conservative than many of us. I mean, he really went the other way. He would put my ears in toe sometimes. But his name is Michael. If he ever comes to Florida, trust me, I'm going to introduce him to you. A wonderful man. And one thing I'm bringing up Michael is this. As I got to know him as the years went by, I said, Michael, do you have any hobbies? And he surprised me. I've never heard anybody else say this. His answer was, work. That was his work. All he knew from his childhood on was work. When he was growing up as a kid, when he got out of school, they had a pet store. He worked. When he got out of that and went out of high school, he worked. He worked at GM. He worked at there. And again, when he retired, he didn't want to retire, but GM closed down, so he retired. What did he do with his free time? Work. When I called him a few months ago, I said, Michael, did I wake you up? I called him at 7:30 in the morning. He didn't like that answer. He knew good well that I didn't wake him up. Because what was he already doing? Working. He comes from a different generation, doesn't he? That word kind of has gone by the wayside, in my opinion, for a lot of people today. But it's a good word. We need to work. Now, as Christians, we need to work, and it does take work. We need to work at being good Christians. It doesn't come easy. You got to work at it. And you got to keep on working at it. Titus chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Titus chapter 2. As we're turning to Titus, I'm reminding, as I think about Michael and the good times we had together. He didn't like sports, and you know I'm a big sports fan. So if I wanted to bore him as we were working, because we were all together doing work somewhere in the church building or somewhere else or for someone, I'd bring up sports. And I knew I was hitting a raw bone with him because he'd glare at me. He thought it was a waste of time to think about any sports. And I was trying to get him to find some hobby. It's just like when I came to Florida, my wife said I was miserable. I don't agree with her, but she said I was. Because I left full-time preaching. In fact, I didn't leave the Lord, but I left preaching. And I think, well, I can handle this. I've preached for all these years, and I didn't know what to do with myself. Because basically my whole life, my adult life, has been studying, teaching, and preaching. And now I'm going to congregations, and they're good congregations. I'm still studying, but I'm not studying with the view that I'm teaching that class, so you study a little bit different that way. I'm not preaching. And my wife just said I was miserable. You know what she told me? She had the dare to tell me, you need to get a hobby. Hobby? I was in my 60s at that time. Who gets a hobby in their 60s? I've always wanted to learn to play golf. No one ever taught me how to play golf. She said, maybe you should go learn how to play golf. No, I'm in my 60s. I'm not going to go to some place to teach you how to play golf. Plus, I'm told it gets pretty expensive. So, okay. I tried to get my grandchildren to play golf so I could be the bag boy for them, but that didn't work. She suggested other hobbies. No. We need to work. Most of us are in a generation that you do what? So my point to you, if you're going to retire, nothing wrong with retiring, but be prepared you're going to do something. That you're not going to just sit there and vegetate. Oh, and if you're a Christian, you got to work at being a Christian. Let's go to Titus chapter 2, 11 and 12. For the grace of God that brings salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. That's so simple. I can quote that so quickly. But you got to work at it to do those things. We'll talk more about this next week, perhaps, as I'm working on a lesson along those lines. We need to work. Ephesians 4:16. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 16. It tells us here, as we talk about work, it tells us, Verse 16, from whom the whole body joined and knit together by which every joint supplies according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself. Every part does its share. Glad you're here. But your sole duty is not simply being here. You do your share. You work. You grow spiritually, and you look for the opportunity to be the type of example before others, whether it be volunteering somewhere. I know I've been told Sister Mary, though she's had medical issues for many years, she, I think, just recently quit her volunteering because she's home taking care of Ronnie now, if I understand correctly. But that's good because she's out in the community setting the example as a Christian. That's fantastic. You need to work. You need to be the example. We need to uplift one another. Again, I don't think we have to be telling one another what you have to do, but look around. Who's not here? Who's not been here? What are you doing about it? Have you called them? I don't like calling, so you can send them a note. You don't want to send a note, then you can send a text if they have the phone that takes text. But there's some. Now, here's the problem. I think we all intend to do things like that, but we never get around to it. Right? You need to work. I need to work. And then, of course, 1 Corinthians 15:58. We're almost done this evening. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. We need to work. And that's one of the problems. You know, when we look at the churches in Revelation, remember that one of them was while living but yet dead. They weren't working. They had a name, but they're dead. I think sometimes we have a nice building, by the way. We have a nice building, got a sign out front, nothing wrong with that. But now to get people, we got to work. Keep ourselves here, we've got to work. And I really sympathize with parents, with kids, because it's harder today than ever to get families with kids. But just keep on keeping on. And maybe you'll get one family somewhere down the road. And maybe that one family will get two more families. And before you know it, maybe we'll have five or six families. I don't know, but maybe. But it starts with one. You got to work. Set the example. In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58, it tells us here in verse 58, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast and movable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And of course, our labor is not in vain because we have heaven. Now, sometimes we don't see the fruit of our work, but there might be fruit when we're no longer here. But you got to work. But let's go on. We're almost done. Hope. Hope. We have a society that is basically hopeless. I don't even want to begin to go into statistics on people who are committing suicide. And it's not just one group. It's young, middle-aged, and older people. And it's not just not worldly people. It's religious people. And some of those religious peoples are members of the Lord's church. And I don't understand. I can tell you honestly, I don't understand what brings a person to that point. But I know what they're lacking if they're a Christian and it brings them to that point. They've lost their hope. How sad is that? They've lost their hope. Boy, that's the thing that keeps us going. Because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm getting older in years. Years ago, it didn't bother me. But now when they talk about Social Security, my ears perk up. And I don't know where they come with it. I think they try to scare us older people. But they said, do you know by the way things are going right now, by 2034, all who have Social Security is going to be cut in half. I don't know who came up with that. I don't like that idea. I don't know how you feel about it. But my hope is not based on the Social Security check. Don't misunderstand. If you deserve Social Security, you need to get it. But if your hope is based on things like that, you have a very shallow base to hang on. Correct? If your hope is based on your economic well-being, and I wish you the best, But it's very fragile because things can change overnight. And I'm not saying you shouldn't save, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have 401ks, and I'm not saying you can't invest. That those are things good in and of themselves. But if your hope is based on that, oh, I've got X amount of money to retire on. Oh, bad choice, because things can change. Your hope is not based on those things. Your hope is based on heaven. And you know what? That's something that's unchangeable because it's from God. Isn't that wonderful? You can go to the doctor this week. I hope that's not the case. But you can go to the doctor this week and they can tell you, hey, you're in stage 4 cancer on something. Well, that's got to be devastating. I don't expect you to go home if you get that advice and say, yippee! No, I don't. I surely wouldn't say yippee, would you? But you still have that hope. See, that's the beauty part of being a Christian. You still have that hope. I look at overseas. Those people need hope. I look here. We got so much abundance, and we still have people that are just drowning in despair and depression. We need hope. Remember Colossians chapter 3? And maybe some of it is due to us as preachers that we don't preach on this enough, on the hope that's ours. Maybe we need a steady dose of lessons on hope and look into things above. It says Colossians 3:1, if you are raised with Christ, set those things which are above, set your mind on those things which are above where Christ is sitting at the right hand. Set your mind on things above, not on things of the earth. It's very easy to get a wrong focus. We need to remember the hope that is ours. I remember when my son was in the military and he was stationed in Saudi Arabia and there were some conflicts going on in that area. Couldn't sleep at night. So I had to remember the hope. I didn't want him coming home in a body bag. I didn't want him coming home with lost limbs. I didn't want him coming home psychologically unbalanced. Our young people who are in the military, praise God that they made such a choice. I'm not just suggesting you go there. But we have these freedoms because somebody was willing to put their neck out on the line. And I'm thankful for that hope. But the hope is not in them because that could be destroyed. The hope is in things above. You know, I was glad last night when I watched the ending of what had transpired overseas. And I think they kind of a little overdid it about America, but then at the end they mentioned God. Thank be to God for that. Because our hope's in God and not in physical things. Hebrews 6:18 through 20, I'm not going to read that, but it talks about the hope which is the anchor of the soul. That's what keeps us going. We need to have this hope. Things are not always going to be easy. I've demanded of Susan, and she better listen to me, I've demanded of her she cannot die before me. That is not in the cards. Trouble is, I don't have no control over that. None whatsoever. And God forbid, I don't ever want to see that day. I don't want to preach her funeral. You say, would you? Yes, because I think I'd be the most qualified being with her for over 50 years. I don't want to see that day coming. I'd rather see Jake preaching my funeral. But you know what? Those of you who are widows and widowers, you got to cling to that hope. The hope that God has promised us. Thank goodness for. You see, if this life was all there's to it, we are in trouble, aren't we? Because there's a lot of things I don't have control over. That's why Philippians 3:13 and 14, I keep on pressing forward to the things which are above. I enjoy being here. In this world, I enjoy being around people. I enjoy being around my loved ones. I enjoy about being around my grandchildren, my silly one grandchild. I don't know when he did it, but I got a little message. He took a selfie, and he was so close to him, I thought it was a pig at first. But it was him. I enjoy seeing, I'm saving it, so anytime I'm upset, I can look at that and laugh. So again, this place is only temporary. As a Christian, it could get bad, but you got hope. And then finally, see, I've counted 6 out of 7. Maybe you're asking, well, I don't know why he doesn't include this word, so I'll include it. Your soul. Your soul. Because that's really the most important thing. Your soul and my soul. Matthew 16, 26. For what profit is it to a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what will he give in exchange for his soul? We all have one. Our soul is not our external looks. Our soul is the part of us that is eternal, that will either go to heaven or end up in condemnation we call hell. It's totally up to us. And that's why as we close, I ask this question, 3 John 2. Beloved, I pray that you might prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. How does your soul prosper? Well, your soul prospers by feeding upon the Word of God and making it a part of your life and believing in what you're reading and then living it through your life to get you through whatever comes your way. I hope this has been helpful to you. 7 little words, all 4-letter words, but every one of those words has an impact on life. If you're here tonight and your soul is not in the ranks of having heaven, do something about it. If you need to repent and be baptized, the brethren here will help you do that. If you've done that and are not living right, then make those changes. If it's something private, keep it private. But if it's something where we can help one another, let's do that. Because I'm going to tell you what, the most important thing is not your legacy. The most important thing is not how big a bank account you have. The most important thing is not all the awards you received. The most important thing is your soul. And Jesus died for your soul and for mine. If any way you're subject to the gospel call, won't you come tonight as we stand and as we sing?